Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. I'm your host. Thank you for joining us today. Today we're going to have a special episode. We're going to be discussing one of the documentary Oscar nominees. Well, an Oscar nomination for best for documentary feature length. The film is titled Abacus. Small enough to go to jail. And we'll wait to get a little bit more into it till we have the guest and the director on the phone. And this was a really interesting documentary. And I don't just suggest things because it's the guest. I don't actually take guests if I don't like their film. So I had seen this before it came across being able to invite them on. And all due respect to all filmmakers, I think it's hard work to make a bad movie. I've produced 4 or 5 features. And so I never trash a filmmaker, criticize. It does nothing to for film or anything like that. And so it was just kind of coincidental that I was very jazzed that usually we don't get to see the animation or the short subjects or the documentary shorts or usually the documentary features. A couple of art houses will run blocks of shorts for one price or blocks of the animation, or maybe they'll run 2 of the... But this year was pretty smart. They put... I forget the exact name of it. I pronounce it wrong. It's about steroids. It's on Netflix and on Amazon Prime. They have this Abacus, small enough to jail. Sorry, I said to go to jail. I don't know why I wrote that. I guess it was just the sentence sometimes that we speak. I apologize. Small enough to jail. So they had that on Netflix, and then there's also Strong Island on Netflix. I know this show isn't to promote them, but I just want to give people a chance to see these documentaries and get a chance to view what we're talking about and have a context. So going into Oscar Sunday, you get to enjoy a little bit more about movies than just the big ones and the ones that people like to argue and fight about right now. Side note, my opinion, not that of the filmmakers. I never thought that the most controversial movie of the year would be about a woman wanting to leave Sacramento. I lived in Sacramento for 4 years and I can totally understand wanting to leave Sacramento. So it wasn't like that was a big surprise. And Inspector Gadget cracked the code. What a weird time we live in. The Oscars coming up March 3rd, and it's gonna be a great night. Exciting to talk to nominees. I've done this a few times in the past for a magazine. And hold on a sec, we have our caller calling in. Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures.
Hi, this is Steve James calling in.
Hello, thank you for your call. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Well, I'm actually perfect. Whenever I do this show, I'm couldn't be better. So thank you for asking. So I obviously gave just a brief explanation, let people know they could see it on Prime, which was fantastic that you guys did. I had watched this film a couple of weeks ago, so it was just a pure coincidence when I saw the email. So thank you for offering us a chance to see this, and we're not just stuck seeing all the big known films. My first question for you, because obviously they sent a synopsis and talked about this being a small bank, and one of the only ones being indicted in the economic crash of 2008, 2009. First question, and it just has to be cliche. What was the exact spark that made you want to do this? And not just to kind of like be the first, or because they were the first. I'm talking about that filmmaker spark that makes you go, okay, I'm going to give 3 years of my life to it.
Well, it wasn't 3 years in this case, so that's good news.
Excellent.
Yes. But, you know, I think the spark really, initially I, of course, was very intrigued by the case and what was happening and why was this bank being put on trial and all the circumstances that went into that. But I think the real spark happened when I met the family. You know, I was really taken with them and with their courage and their honesty and also their personality. You know, they're really kind of a remarkable family, four very strong-willed daughters, a strong-willed wife, and a father, the founder of the bank, Mr. Sung, who, you know, is a real pillar in the Chinese community here in New York City.
And how exactly, obviously this is a touchy subject for everyone, and I've always felt like it's kind of fallen on, if you didn't lose anything, then it's kind of just like another news story. And if you're one of the people who lost everything, then you don't like talking about it. And so it's like, I watched my father lose his home and his business and his career and, you know, have to spend 5 years, you know, starting from the beginning again to get back to where he was. So for me, I'm like, blank the banks. Like, I don't care what their excuse is. I don't care what their baloney is. All they lost was maybe a little less salmon on their bagel. So to meet this family who wasn't doing that, and by the way, I don't tell filmmakers anything they want to hear, but you did a fantastic job of portraying this. I loved the scene where there was a run, and the whole time during the run, I was saying, oh man, this guy got a real It's a Wonderful Life scene going on.
Yeah.
Before you referenced, I said that in my mind. I go, what is it? I go, is Jimmy Stewart going to come walking around the corner? So I liked how you threw that in afterwards. I go, okay, cool. I go, this is a real filmmaker because he caught on to this. Was there something, and again, this is a show we kind of jump around. I don't like ABC shows. Was there something, I love to hear when a filmmaker has a lesson that there's no possible way you could have got as a filmmaker without doing this film.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, I think we're all inclined to look at banks with great suspicion. And that's due to a lot of things. And of course, it's due to what happened in 2008, but it's also due to before that. You know, there's this idea, I think we have this feeling that these banks, these huge banks, really care more about profit than anything and not service. And that's where a community bank comes in. And so, you know, some people have said this is a story of a bank where the bank's a good guy, which is really surprising. And I think that's that's true. So I certainly learned a lot about, I felt like, the role that this bank played in that community and what a pillar it was. It wasn't just a place where people put their money. It really was part of building that community. So that was a real revelation to me. I think another real revelation was I think I had certain ideas about what a Chinese family is based on media stereotypes, you know, the really strong father figure at the top, the dutiful children and wife. And, you know, nothing could be further from the truth in this case. As I said earlier, you know, you have these very strong-willed individuals, three of the four children are lawyers and had very, very clear opinions about how this case should be tried. And dad was a lawyer. So, you know, it was just such a vibrant sort of portrait of a Chinese family that we haven't seen enough of in the media. And that's certainly something that a lot of people in the Chinese American community have come up to me afterwards and said at screenings is, you know, this is my family. This looks like my family.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. I'm glad that you said the attorney part, because I didn't know if that was something I couldn't say, but that was where I kind of really enjoyed. I just thought that would be not cool, but it would almost be fun to be indicted and have four of your family members be lawyers. I think with indictments being such a scary thing.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Oh yeah,
I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries.
What was the question again? I was changing over to my headset so that I could, it'd be better quality sound for you.
Oh, no problem.
My earbuds.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Thank you for thinking of that. What I was going to say was you had mentioned that, because I wanted to mention it, but I didn't know if I could, so I'm glad you did, about the father was an attorney and the daughters, and I thought that was a really great, obviously that you didn't create it, but a great story turn, because obviously indictments are scary. The word is meant to be so scary, but then it's almost like it would be not fun, but it would be kind of like a family joke to be indicted. And then you have four attorneys in your family. So, was there ever something that they expressed to you of how can I put this? How, like, a fear that there would have been if there wasn't four attorneys? Like, did you ever kind of sense this, like, the confidence was coming from the attorneys and not just because they didn't do something wrong? Like, am I making sense?
Yeah, first of all, they hired great attorneys to represent them. But, the fact that, you know, but they were very much involved, you know, actively engaged in the case themselves, given their background. You know, they were not the typical clients or defense accused in this case. So, you know, I think that was key. I think interestingly enough, it's not in the film, but it was something that came out in one of the interviews with Polly Greenberg, who was the head of economic crimes in the DA's office, you know, on the other side. And at one point in an interview with her, she made mention of the fact that when I asked, like, why would, you know, this family and this bank go to such great lengths to root out fraud, and that they did when they discovered it themselves, and be so open about it and reporting it and everything they did, if they were busy orchestrating it, why wouldn't they hide it? And at one point, Polly Greenberg said, well, they're all lawyers. And it was the gist of her comment was that, you know, they're sneaky and calculating because they're lawyers. They know how to kind of, you know, work the system and make it appear as if they really are doing the right thing when they're not doing the right thing. None of it made sense, honestly. It sounded like a twisted plot in a Law and Order episode or something, you know, the way she laid it out.
Right. Well, yeah, there is that, there is that kind of they're lumped in a different kind of way. Like, I think there's I feel so bad because I don't like to judge anyone, but probably if you were to ask me if there's two things I don't trust, it would be a lawyer or a banker. So have both on the same team. The problem is I know honest people on both sides, but then it's just like, you know, why'd you choose that profession and then wonder why people tell jokes about you at parties? Is there another thing I'm always interested with documentarians, especially since I'm not one and would never try to make one. This it says here, the press kit, it's asking fundamental questions about the purpose of a bank, of what a bank should be in a community, especially an immigrant community, and whether the prosecution of this small financial institution has much larger implications for the role of the bank in our society. How did you feel going in with your feelings about banks and walking out of the editing room?
Well, I went into this case, or this making this film and looking at the case. Honestly, I was inclined to believe the Sungs because of what I had heard about how they had, they had been the ones to discover the fraud to begin with. They fired the loan officer who was engaged in fraud. They initiated their own internal investigation, which they didn't have to do, and got rid of a couple of other people. They reported it to the regulators, which they were supposed to do, and they cooperated with the DA's office until it became clear that the DA seemed to be more interested in prosecuting them than helping them. And so everything about that made me inclined to want to believe them. That, coupled with the fact that our producer, one of the producers on the film, Mark Minton, had the reason I heard about this story to begin with, because it wasn't being reported in the mainstream media virtually at all, was because Mark had known the family for 10 years. And so we had a kind of in with the family through him. And, you know, I think clearly in those situations, you're inclined to, or I was inclined to want to believe them. But I was also really clear with them that, should we uncover evidence that really seemed to indicate that they were in fact guilty, or if the case being tried against them that we were documenting made that case strongly, and if they were in fact found guilty and it seemed like the right verdict, that all that was going to be in the film and that we were going to do everything in our power to bring that into the story because we needed to. And they didn't flinch at that, you know, which also told me that they didn't feel like they had anything to hide here.
Right. This wasn't a Wolf of Wall Street. Everybody's burning the documents and running when the indictment.
This was the mirror opposite of what happened in 2008 in every respect. They're a small bank with 6 branches. They discovered the fraud themselves and took all those actions that I just spoke about. None of the big banks did that. They did not engage in any of the specious, credit default swap vehicles or packaging of toxic loans that the big banks did. They didn't do any of that. That's not what was on trial here at all. They have one of the lowest default rates of any bank in the United States. They have their default rate is 1/20th the national average. None of the loans under indictment went south, and only 9 loans of 3,000 loans that were looked at in the course of this investigation over the period of the indictment, only 9 of 3,000 loans that Abacus made went bad, which is remarkable. It's completely remarkable. So, it kind of in every respect, this was like Alice looking through the looking glass or whatever.
Right. Well, and also so people know and can have a better understanding, this is kind of it's not a real life version, but this alludes to, if you've ever seen that movie, The Big Short. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
Sure.
It's a Wonderful Life, which I hear people go, why would I watch that? And it makes me cringe. But it goes back to telling the story of community banks and how sometimes their money is helping someone else get a house. And it's not always just sitting there in the drawer. And that's kind of the line that's drawn versus opposed to Chase Bank, where there's a Chase ATM on every corner of Manhattan. I mean, rightfully so, it's Chase Manhattan, but that was the most obscene thing I'd ever seen in New York City. I thought, how much money does a bank have to where there's this many Chase ATMs. I don't care that it's Chase Manhattan. There should still, something's going on here. And this was right after the crash. I was in New York City and I thought, wow, everything crashed and you still have this many machines with money. Like, you didn't even lose some ATMs in it. Like, people right. lost their 401k and you didn't just have to remove something from a wall. Okay, so right. one of my last questions is did this give you, because I kind of asked you how it changed this story, but was there a specific opinion that you had about big banks? Did this make it worse, or did this make it kind of like, there's people that just kind of go, it happened and it's done with and there's nothing I could do. So, or did this kind of give you a little bit more of a, like, you want to stand up for the little guy and you want to not just let Goliath, you know, always step right. on us? As a documentarian, how did that make you feel?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of naturally inclined towards the little guy, if you will. And so, I've made films about people who find themselves on the margins of society. And the Sungs, even though they are well off and had the ability to defend themselves and spend millions of dollars defending themselves, they are Chinese-American immigrants. The parents are immigrants. The kids are first generation. So, you know, what this bank went through was infuriating, and against the sort of sharp relief of what did not happen in 2008 that you've spoken of, and all the people who were hurt, and yet the banks remained intact. We bailed them out. We fined them eventually, but we bailed them out first so that they would survive, even though, as you pointed out, and even within your own family, people were really hurt. So it definitely makes me angrier. And as Neil Borofsky says in the film, who was involved in the TARP program, you know, he says, in this case, who got hurt? Who lost their home? What happened that was bad as a result of these handful of fraudulent mortgages, which the bank clearly acknowledged happened. And so, you know, there was no damage. People got homes, there was no damage. And so, yes, when you think about all of what they went through to have to defend themselves when the big banks didn't have to do anything except pay large fines, it makes you more angry.
Yeah. And I know, we won't get into it, but so people can know, a lot of huge fans of this film. Mr. James made Hoop Dreams, and so the quality of work you will find in this as well. And I've got over the years, and in film school we would have such arguments about that film, and so I wanted to let you guys know that we always like to give guests a reference point, even if the show's not about that. One last question for you, or actually two, if you don't mind. We do this with every guest. So you're a filmmaker, obviously, and you have the story you want, or you have the story, the budget, everything, none of the stuff that us filmmakers have to go bananas about. Do you have a dream genre that, before you retire, stop doing whatever films you're doing, you want to see this genre or story on your filmography?
You mean a particular story or a particular
kind of film, like
I want to do a horror film or something?
It could be like you want to do a horror film or a Western what is your dream that you want to see on the filmography? Yeah.
Well, many, many years ago, I had this dream, which you know, has not come to pass, that I wanted to do the kind of definitive biography of Custer. So I guess you could say a Western, because he was an incredibly complex and controversial figure. And, you know, one of my all-time favorite movies is Little Big Man, which features a very sort of comic version of General George Armstrong Custer. But it also has a lot going on in that film. But I've always thought that it would be really interesting to make a biography about Custer based on a book that was written many, many years ago, which is when I got the idea about it, called Son of the Morning Star by Evan S. Connell. It's an incredible piece of history and brings his life vividly to life.
Little Big Man, for those of you that don't know, check it out. A very young Dustin Hoffman. Well, that's really interesting. That's an interesting answer. So, of course, the last question is just the reverse. You can't turn it down for story or any of those reasons, but you're back to, I don't know if I won't ask, but you're back to that filmmaker start where you're eating a bag of Doritos for dinner and the banks, no pun intended, are coming after you, and everything, the lights are going to be turned off, but there's no way you're going to do this genre or be involved with this film.
So what is it I do?
No, that you wouldn't do. That, like, you would not do a horror film. You would not, and it can't be like I wouldn't do something about child molestation.
No matter how how desperate I am, I wouldn't do. I'd probably say horror film, because I've never liked horror films. I've always found them, frankly, too scary. And I really don't enjoy that. So I probably would decline on the horror film. Now, you know, a film like Get Out, which is sort of, I think he's defining it as like a social horror film or something like that. To me, that's different. That's really not a horror film. That's a thriller. The horror genre is something, going back to when I was just a little kid and was scared to death to watch those films. And I've never really warmed up to them since.
That's interesting, because one of the only genres I can't watch is horror, and there's something about it. And being a little kid, my older brother would force me to watch Jason and Freddy Krueger, and I used to think Freddy Krueger was in the closet, and, you know, just like, what an asshole my older brother was. Pardon my language. thinking back about it, it's like, why do you do that to a little kid? Get Out, for people that don't know, check it out. It is, on the surface, first viewing, I just thought of it as a horror film. And then when it gets to the end, it is a fantastic social message. We had the cinematographer of it on the show, so it was great to hear it from that point of view. And, of course, we're happy for it, for the awards it got. And lastly, thank you so much for coming by the show, and congratulations on your nomination. And we wish you the best, and really, truly appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Enjoyed talking.
Oh, thank you. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
And that was Mr. Steve James for Abacus, Small Enough to Jail. And those, you can catch that on Prime for free. I know sometimes people say, but Prime, you tell me to go watch it and it's $5.99. I understand, we're all on a budget, and when we're movie pigs, junkies, nuts, whatever it is, have to watch movies all the time, I understand $5.99 can turn into $599. But this is Amazon Prime for free. Abacus, ABACUS, Small Enough to Jail. Check it out. And please tell your friends to check it out, and then come by Talking Pictures and listen to this interview we just had with the director. All right, aloha. This was nominated for an Oscar Sunday, March 3rd. or fourth. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but I'm pretty sure it's the third. I can't have everything on the top of my head, so that wasn't a faux pas. All right, remember, whether it's morning, afternoon, night, or whatever other time of day you find, make sure and watch a good movie. Happy Aloha Friday.